Tom Singer, author of Some Assembly Required, now in its second edition, and The ABCs of Networking, is Ed's guest today. In this fast-paced interview, they discuss practice development techniques and increasing your connections by using networking principles.
Tom, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
You know, you are making a name for yourself in the field of practice development and networking, and perhaps it would be appropriate for us to start our conversation today with a question on why people, particularly lawyers, should devote time to networking, especially with all the billing requirements and other pressures that lawyers have on themselves today.
Sure. Well, you know, there was a time when lawyers, you know, business sort of came to them. If they had the business, no one was trying to take it away from them. I talked to one attorney who told me that when he first started practicing 35 years ago, if he had a client, other lawyers respectfully stayed away. And he's angry because today even his friends from law school are calling that client trying to get them to move their business over to them. So the climate has changed. And since people do business with people they know and like, it's really important that people know and like both the firm and the individual lawyers so that they can make that short list when it comes time for companies to look at, you know, who's going to represent them, either for a corporate deal or for a litigation case or whatever the matter might be.
Well, that in part refers over to the idea and the issue of reputation in the business community. Does that reputation of partners carry over to associates, or are each of these people, partners and associates, sort of individuals and have to build their own reputation?
Well, you know, I think that firms need to work together, but at the same time, each lawyer is responsible for building their own book of business. And associates used to believe that they would just get fed work and then one day they would magic wand would be waved over them and they'd be anointed as a partner. But nowadays, when people are reaching that sort of step to partnership, one of the things they're being judged on is the ability to bring business in. Can they be a rainmaker? And if they don't have any contacts in the business community, they're being passed over. I know a number of lawyers who are 7th, 8th, 9th year associates who end up going into an of counsel role and never make partner in their firm. And they've said to me when I've counseled them, they say, nobody ever told me when I was a first-year, a second-year, a third-year lawyer that this was important. So while, sure, partners kind of have the reputation for being the people who are known in the community, serving on the board, doing all these things, that doesn't happen by magic because somebody puts a P behind your name. You've got to start when you're young building that reputation, building that brand in your business community, and that can be a geographic local business community, like within the city you live in, or it can be a business community in a practice area because you have a specialty, or it can be an industry reputation. But if you don't start young making connections and growing up with other people in that particular business community, you're going to be left behind when you reach that critical stage of your career. So I think it's, of course, important for partners, but I also think it's important for associates, even in their first couple of years, that they start making connections and building that reputation because it's going to pay off for them in the long run.
What do you say to the associate who is told by the managing partner of a reasonably good-sized firm that your job is to do the work? Your job is not practice development. Later on, you might be involved in practice development, but right now, we need to get the work out.
Sure. Well, you know, the one thing when I speak to law firms around the country, the first thing I always say is we're not here to cause a competition between visibility and credibility. They have to do good work and they have to get it out in a timely manner, and that's the job of the early stage associate. But that doesn't mean that they also can't be working on their visibility. You know, their social life that they have outside the firm, and even though lawyers have worked pretty hard in those first years, they still have a social life. They need to be developing reputations in their city and within their practice group and things like that so that they're laying that early groundwork. So if the firm is telling them, hey, that's not important to you, the individual lawyer still needs to grasp it because we've seen firms downsize. That never used to happen. Lawyers never got fired or downsized or laid off. But in the past 5 or 6 years, we've seen it. In fact, I worked for a firm that went through that. And what happened was is the lawyers who had connections inside other firms, inside clients, inside their business communities, all found jobs immediately. And those who sat back and just expected the partners to take care of them were the ones who found themselves sitting around for a long time hoping to find employment. So they need to take care of themselves, and one of the ways to do that is to lay that foundation to build a network.
Well, it sounds to me like visibility kind of leads us into networking, and networking gives you the visibility. One of the things that has been said is that decision makers never attend networking events. How do you, is this true? And if so, how do you deal with it?
Yeah, that's one of the big myths of networking. People think, well, the decision makers are never there. Well, first of all, there's 2 points to this. The first point is decision makers are not hermits. They go somewhere. They don't just go to work and go home. Decision makers participate in things. So you need to do your homework and find out where do these people go in the city that you live in or the industry that you participate in, and put yourself in that type of situation where they are. People attend trade conferences. People attend Chamber of Commerce dinners. Business owners and decision makers are active in their communities, so you just need to discover where those are. The second thing is it's not just about going out and meeting a decision maker. So many people think, oh, I'm going to go network, and they go out and they meet a couple people, they trade cards, they go back to their office, and they wait for the phone to ring. And they tap their fingers and they wait for the phone to ring, and nothing ever happens, and they go, you know, this networking stuff, it's BS, it doesn't work. Well, the truth of the matter is it's not just about going and meeting decision makers and expecting them to call you the next day and hand you business. Sometimes you meet a referral source. You don't actually meet a decision maker. You meet somebody who knows the decision maker, and over time you build a friendship with that person who maybe works inside that company. I used to, before I worked doing legal marketing, I actually worked for a company that sold to law firms, and the corporate lawyers in the city I live in were my clients. That's who made the decisions for what I did. And there was one firm that I wanted to get in. They used my competitor, and they just wouldn't give me the time of day. And I was young, and I was new, and they just were too busy. It was during the Internet boom. They were just crazy busy. But I befriended the marketing manager of that firm, and she was really nice, and we hit it off. And it wasn't like I was using her. We really became really good friends. And at one point, I said, you know, I'd really love to meet the people in your firm because they could refer me business. I could do stuff for their clients. It would be wonderful. And she said, why don't you and I go for coffee? However, don't meet me at Starbucks. Meet me at my office. So I showed up at the law firm, and there was the receptionist, you know, guarding the doors back to where the lawyers were kept. Nobody gets back there to disturb the lawyers. So I asked for Kimberly. She came up to the front. She turned to the receptionist. She goes, oh, Tom and I are going to go for coffee. She hit the elevator button, and she goes, oh, my gosh, I forgot my purse. Come on, Tom. We walked right past this receptionist who was waving at me, like, hi, have fun. And we went door to door, and she introduced me to every partner and every senior associate in her law firm, and now I'd met them. So the next time I was out and I saw them, I could have a conversation saying, oh, I met you at your office when I was there with Kimberly. And what happened was that was the seed that led to relationships that over the course of the next year led me to winning 100% of that firm's business. So it's not about meeting the decision maker. It's about meeting somebody who might be able to open the door to the decision maker.
Well, Tom, it sounds to me like your scenario requires an incredible amount of time just for one person in the network, because you have to not just meet that person, you have to befriend that person. You really have to create a relationship. With all the work that's being done by lawyers today, you know, upwards of 2,000 hours billable per year, where does one get the time to do what you're talking about? Now, you talk about a social life. They're saying right now they don't have a social life, let alone the ability to do practice development.
Well, it's not easy. If it was easy, everybody would be doing it. But the lawyer who I worked for, who I thought was the absolute best, he was the managing partner of the firm I worked for, he was the absolute ever seen. He was the go-to person around the state for his practice area and everything else that anybody who knew him needed. And he billed about 2,400 hours a year. But at the same time, he was always ripping out articles where he saw friends of his quoted, handing them to his secretary with a note saying, great quote. He was, when he saw somebody won an award, he was sending cookie bouquets to their office saying, congratulations on winning the Entrepreneur of the Year award. Whatever it was, if he knew them and something happened in their life or their business, he honored it. He found a way to do it. And a lot of these things took 3-4 seconds for him to do. He worked with his assistant to get some of this stuff done. But he would cut things out of the paper and send things off. So there are ways to do it. And a lot of people, especially because they don't teach networking and business development in a law school, a lot of people think that this is an action that you take predominantly when you're not busy, and that when you are busy, you can turn it off. And I argue that building a network of contacts that can and will refer you business, it's a lifestyle. It's just always thinking of other people. How can I reach out and touch them? How can I make a difference? How can I be remembered? What can I do for them? And just constantly doing it when you have 5 seconds, 5 minutes, 5 hours, and then weaving, you know, your social life when you do have the time for it, weaving that into you know, the type of events you go to. It's just a choice you have to make.
Well, in other words, you're saying that it is a lifestyle, that you don't have work and then play, that it is a continuum throughout the 24-hour period of the day.
Absolutely. If you want to be successful by having a referral network, you can't turn it on and off.
Right. Well, one of the things that people talk about or complain about, and I think you alluded to it earlier, is that people you meet during your networking activities never refer you business. And I know that one response to that might be, well, if you send them business, nature abhors a vacuum, so they're going to have to respond and send you business as well. But what if, when you meet somebody, you really don't have business to send to them? Or, for example, let's say that accountants can be your referral base, but you know 3 or 4 or 10 accountants, and you cannot send all of them business. So what kind of response should the individual think about?
Sure. Well, the first thing to remember is that networking and building connections with people is not about keeping score. So it's not, oh, I sent him business, now he'll send me business. You know, it's really going out there and being the go-to person. It's being a resource for a lot of people. And lots of times you'll do a lot for people, and those particular people won't be able to help you. But in the scope of sort of the whole world, I don't like to use the word karma, but really in a karmatic way, other people are going to find ways to do things for you if you have the reputation of being a giver. But going back to what you were saying, you know, one of the other things is that, like, I know a lot of lawyers. I no longer work for a law firm, but oftentimes because I know so many, especially of the corporate security lawyers in my community, people will ask me, hey, who should we talk to for this business that I'm starting, or for my brother-in-law's business, or, you know, a venture capitalist will say, what's your opinion on these guys? I will usually give 2 or 3 referrals to one person looking for a lawyer. And I will let those lawyers know, by the way, I referred these 2 other lawyers at these 2 other firms. It's not my job to win them the business. But if I can make a referral and they get on the short list because of it, win or lose, they're very happy that I gave them the opportunity. So it's not just about, sometimes people think, oh, I can only have one accountant friend. You know, I don't think that's right. I think you can have a dozen. Well, I mean, a dozen might be a lot, but I think you can have 3 or 4 accountant friends, and you could refer them all and let them win the business based on their own merits and the love connection that they make with the individual prospect.
All right, let's get down to basics and talk about how it is that a lawyer can network. What are the principles? What are the tasks that the lawyer has to do in order to start the process of networking?
Well, the first thing that you have to do is you have to put yourself out there into that business community we talked about. And we'll talk about it as if it's a geographic, like a city. But it could be, you know, a practice area. It could be an industry. But, you know, most people live in a city, and a lot of their work comes from that city. So we'll use that as an example. If you live in Austin, Texas, where I live, you know, there, and you practice corporate and securities law and you're focusing on technology companies, there are a handful of organizations where the majority of the people who work in those tech companies and the people who service those tech companies go to. So you want to go to the Austin Technology Council meetings. They have meetings, they have socials, they have lots of different types of events. There's a group here called TechChange, which is a roundtable entrepreneurs discussion where they have a speaker and then all the tech execs sit around a table with an expert at their individual dinner tables and talk about the topic. You know, there's the Association for Corporate Growth chapter. You know, so you have 2 or 3 things that match up with who your clients are, and you have to put yourself out there. You have to take the time to make it. And I've seen so many lawyers who sign up to go to these things and their name tag is sitting on the table, and then they just decide it's not important at the last minute because they're busy. You have to make a commitment. And sure, sometimes something's going to come up that you can't get away from. Sometimes you're going to have a fire that you got to put out. But most of the time, it's just a matter of making it a priority. So you got to put yourself out there. Once you're out there, you have to be nice to people. You have to take an interest in them. And that's one of the things that I've seen a lot of lawyers fail to do, is they think, you know, I've been to this great law school, I work for this great firm, you know, come here and kiss my ring. It's just the opposite. You have to go out there and take an interest, ask questions, listen to what people are doing, learn about their business. And sometimes you're going to be surprised how easy it is to find ways to help them, to find ways to make connections of who you can introduce them to through the network that you already have. So you got to go out there, you got to meet people, and then the most important step is you have to follow up. It's happened to all of us where we've met amazing people who could be wonderful contacts for us, they could be wonderful friends in our lives, and yet we never follow up on them. you know, we don't send that handwritten note. We don't send that email. We don't pick up the phone and call them and invite them to lunch or invite them to, you know, a CLE or a learning session that the firm is putting on for clients and prospects and personally invite them. You know, relationships are built. I like to compare it to dating. The night you met your wife, you did not propose to her. Did you?
No, clearly not.
You know, and I actually was giving this speech for a large technology company in the Bay Area, for Cisco, to a group of salespeople, and I made that and raised his hand and said, I did. And I thought he was kidding, so I blew him off, and everybody was like, whoa, he did. The guy, you know, had met her in Mexico City when he was 16, proposed to her, was married the next day, and now 25 years later they have all these kids. And I said, okay, you are the exception. I've never heard anything
right.
Like that.
Well, what's the difference between a handwritten note and email? There's a controversy going about on this as to which is effective and which is just sort of, not effective, to put it kindly.
Well, let me backtrack. I actually gave a speech recently, and a woman challenged me on this part because I think a handwritten note always stands out more than an email. And she challenged me because she worked in the technology industry. And she actually went as far as to say, my clients are offended by handwritten notes because they're tech people. They like email. I think that can't be true. Nobody is ever offended by a handwritten note that says, hey, it was a pleasure to meet you. I really enjoyed our conversation. I get about 150 emails every single day between, you know, my job, people who've read my book, people who want me to speak, and then just my home email account with my brothers and my friends and all that. 150 every single day. Ed, if you sent me an email tomorrow saying it was great interviewing you, I would read that and say, wow, thanks, Ed. It was great talking to you as well. Delete. However, if in 2-3 days I received a handwritten note that talked about what a great time we had talking on this interview, that would be something that would stand out because I do not get 150 handwritten notes every day. And what I did is I put a box under my desk because I write a lot. I write 5 to 10 handwritten notes every week to people I meet or people I want to thank for something they've done for me, for a referral or something along, or a new piece of business. So I know that I'm sending, just by pure math, 250 to 500 notes a year. So let's call it 350 for the sake of making up a number. I know I'm sending that many every single year. Put the box under my desk. You know how many I got last year? 32. So that means that people are not taking the time to send a handwritten note. It's easier to send an email, and it's effective. It's great. It's the way we communicate in our society today. But it doesn't stand out. It doesn't say, I took that extra moment to tell you you're special.
So you say, let's go get some handwritten notes.
Absolutely. Get some good cardstock with your firm name or your personal name on it. Keep them in your desk drawer. And I'm not saying everybody you meet, you want to send them a handwritten note. I mean, I meet a lot of people. But when you have that special connection with somebody or when someone does something for you that stands out, be unique. Do something beyond. Don't just be a Me Too guy. Do something beyond.
What's, in your opinion, as we wrap up our conversation for today, of legal marketing in the legal profession?
Wow, you know, I spent about 4.5 years working inside law firms as their marketing manager and their business development manager for 2 AmLaw 100 firms. I spent a little over 2 years with each of them. And I'll tell you what, it's been 3 years since I worked there, so it's, you know, 6-7 years ago I started. And that industry of legal marketing is evolving. 5 years ago, lawyers didn't even like the word business development. They certainly didn't like the word sales. And now they're embracing the concept. They're bringing in people to train them on business development, on networking, on sales, on public relations. You know, how do you get interviewed by the press? This is things that the large firms are embracing and that they're curious about. Where 5 years ago, they could stomach the word marketing.
Well, as recently as 1995, not only were they not marketing, but they were not even in business, that is, in their minds, such that in 1995, I actually trademarked the phrase, the business of law.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. And I always say that there's sort of 2 schools of lawyers. There are those who look at it as a business, just like any other business, that they have profit and loss, and they have marketing, and they have collateral, and they have, you know, client development, and you know, everything that their client would have. And then there's the other people who say it's a profession. And they sort of look at it as a calling, like the priesthood, that it is somehow more noble than all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the answer is somewhere in the middle. Sure, lawyers go through a lot of schooling, and it is a noble profession. And I honor and respect the people who work inside both large firms and small firms. But the truth is it is a business. and you must run it like a business, and there is no lawyer who would walk into his largest corporate client and say, I have a great idea for you. I think you should fire all of your sales and marketing people. You know, they make a lot of money, and let's face it, they don't have JDs, so you should fire them because you'd save all this money. And then get your senior executives to go out, do all your sales and marketing when they feel like it, if they have time, whether they're trained at it or not, and with no concern if they're good at it. A company would look at you like you were crazy. Companies look at their sales and marketing people as one of the most valuable things that they have. It's one of the most valuable assets a company has is sales and marketing, and that's why the people who work in sales and marketing in the top companies make a lot of money. They make as much or more than partners in law firms.
Oh, yeah.
And the reason is because they value that. And yet, law firms are still struggling with trying to value those skills.
Well, Tom, you're preaching to the choir, and on that note, I want to thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And I look forward to chatting with you further.
It's been great. Thanks, Ed.
You have been listening to a Law Biz podcast. For more podcasts, please visit www.lawbiz.com/podcasts.html. Feel free to tell your friends and colleagues about Law Biz Podcasts. You may duplicate this program in part or in whole, provided that you retain appropriate attribution and copyright notices.